We present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreiber. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Rates.
Hello. In this edition of My Music, the contestants are, as usual, Mr. and Mrs. Amos's son, John, Mr. and Mrs. Muir's son, Frank, and their opponents, Wallace of McWallace of McWallace, and Dennis, the heir to the Norden Millions. I mentioned all this Mr. and Mrs. stuff because the first round, as it happens, is to do with husbands and wives.
We were wondering.
Yes, well, that's the answer, you see. Husbands and wives, Mr.'s and Mrs.'s. John, which husband and wife team does this song bring to your mind?
Brings to mind Mr. and Mrs. Robert Schumann.
That's right, because...
The composer... Well, it's called Frauenliebe und Leben, Woman's Life and Love.
Yes.
A friend of mine, Alec Robertson, whom some of the older listeners may remember, who used to do a lot of talking about music on the radio, told me that when he was a young man, he could manage to speak German, but he'd never mastered actually what it meant. And he used to sing through all these songs, and one day he was singing through this cycle, because he liked Schumann, and after, I think it was number 4 or 5, the friend who was playing the piano said, Alec, do you know what happened to that last song? He said, no. He said, you had a baby.
Yes. The ring on my finger. Yes, number 4 from Frauenliebe und Leben by Robert Schumann, his wife Clara, to whom he dedicated, no doubt. Frank, one of the best-loved marriage songs goes like this.
What will you do?
I'll be as sweet as I can be to you. I will be tender and I will be true. When I am married, sweetheart,
a little song, isn't
lovely,
it?
Isn't
absolutely
it?
Sweet. Yes. It was in 1898, Frank, when that song hit London in a show that ran for 700 performances. What was the show from which that came?
I didn't see it. No idea.
American connection in the title. Have a guess. Well.
No. Can I have a hint?
I don't think you can. I'll tell you what, I'll give you a hint, yes. When We Are Married came from the same show.
Ah! That's very helpful. No, I don't know.
Words by Hugh Morton, music by Gustav Kecker. The Belle of New York was the show. It's worth losing a mark to find out, isn't it?
Yes.
Ian, another opening, another show.
Husbands and wives, think of their lives, always together in every sort of weather. I wonder how the thunder anyone survives.
When the wives suspect the husbands.
And the husbands fool the wives.
Ian, who composed that, and please, for which show?
Well, if I don't know which show, it's rather unlikely that I'm going to know who composed it. It sounds as if it would be somewhere in the pre-war period.
Which war? You're not catching me that way.
No, I meant...
Post-Cressy?
No. Well, definitely post-Cressy. I would have said...
Post-Bannockburn.
Post-Bannockburn, I'll reckon. No, I would say it was shortly after the First World War, sort of 1920s.
Well, or even like during, really.
Mm. Oh, really?
You don't know, do you?
No.
We used to say...
Yes,
I think Dennis has got it. We used to say, Dennis, that Naffy rock cakes were...
Made of the mountains.
Made of the mountains. Your partner's got it for you. Maid of the Mountains, and the composer then would be...
Oh, that was Harold Fraser Simpson.
Yes, various composers involved, but he wrote the bulk of the better songs for the show. Harold Fraser Simpson, the Maid of the Mountains. I think he gets the mark, don't you? That side gets the mark, anyway. Dennis, in your case, not husbands and wives, but wives and lovers.
Wives should always be lovers too. Run to his arms the moment he comes home to you. I'm warning you.
Whose song, Dennis, and who's the singer?
Jack Jones.
Yes.
And it's a Burt Bacharach song.
Yes,
right?
Bacharach, that's right. Burt Bacharach's tune, Jack Jones singing. Wives and lovers. Next round, with a clue to each, should you need it. John, who said, and of which work, I quote, very good, but the young man lacks inexperience.
Lovely.
It's a very nice remark, as Frank spotted, isn't it lovely? The young man lacks inexperience. Who was the young man and who said it?
Was it one composer of another?
Yes, one composer of a very young another. The composer who said it probably said it in French, and the other composer understood him.
Yeah.
Can I give you a musical clue?
Wouldn't have been Eric Satie, would it? About
earlier. No, rather earlier. Shall I give you a musical clue?
Do that.
This was the work about which he said it. That's how it begins.
You're helpful, wasn't it?
Well, four bars at the start of the symphony. I have to tell you, won't I?
Yes.
It was Berlioz who said it of the 18-year-old Saint-Saëns, who just played his first symphony, of which that's the opening in piano reduction.
Well, good.
Yes.
Nice program to be on, you know. You learn things.
We're doing well this week, aren't we?
The remark, I may say, is often misquoted. Very good, but the young man lacks experience, they sometimes say, which, of course, is quite pointless. Yeah. Lacks inexperience is the nice quote. Frank, your turn. When the singer Nicolini finally left England, someone wrote, "Begone our nation's pleasure and reproach, Britain no more with idle trills debauch. Back to thy own unmanly Venice sail, where luxury and loose desires prevail." Words written in 1712. Can you give them an author, I wonder?
Well, there's a lot of that going on.
There was a lot, yeah.
1712.
Because I have a hint ready.
Well, the Italian opera had hit Britain.
That's right. Can you guess what sort of voice the chap had, for a start, with all that stuff about debauch and unmanned Venice and all that?
Castrato.
Well, he was very... Yes. Well, presumably...
Yes, he was
Carinelli. Nicolino was...
Yes. Nicolini was a castrato, right. Not a clue to the author of the words. He was at one time expelled, shortly afterwards expelled from the House of Commons.
Yes, Steele.
He was half of the Mirren Norden of his day, yes. He was Steele.
Steele's right.
They used to speak of Addison and Steele rather than the way they spoke of the writers of Take It From Here later on. He was
not
Sir
much
Richard.
Later
not
on.
Not much. You got it. He was, with a bit of help, he was Sir Richard Steele. Ian, who composed the Scottish March and dedicated it in French, which I translate, to the Earls of Ross and their descendant, General Meredith Reed?
That's what I would call a tough question, Steve.
Would you like a clue?
Yes, I would love a clue.
Here's a clue. That's who it was.
Oh, that was the composer.
Yes.
Well, that I know is Debussy.
That's right.
But I don't get a mark
for
that.
It was his Marche Écossaise.
Really?
Yes, which he dedicated to Les Earls of Ross and their descendant, General Meredith Reed. You got it with a clue, so you get the mark as well. Dennis, according to Rodgers and Hammerstein, what did Mrs. Iva Toguri D'Aquino give to love-hungry sailors in World War II?
I don't remember any Mrs. Iva... What's her name?
She had another name, and this is your musical clue to her identity.
Oh, is it? I know. We get packages from home, we get movies, we get shows, we get speeches from the skipper and advice from Tokyo Rose.
So what did she give them?
Well, I presume that's Mrs. Tokyo Rose.
That's right. Tokyo Rose was Mrs. Iva Toguri D'Aquino.
Could you mind if I make a note of that?
Do that. Yes.
We guess, so the answer was advice. We guess advice from Tokyo Rose.
Dennis gets all the easy questions.
There's a strong association between paintings and music. In a recent programme, we heard some of the music associated with pictures from the National Gallery in London. And Glasgow Art Gallery has now followed suit and produced an LP of its own, from which these next four pieces come. John, you first, as always. On this record, the Pastoral Symphony from Handel's Messiah illustrates Turner's picture called Modern Italy, the Pifferari. After the music, can you tell me what's the connection between this music and Pifferari?
I think the answer is that they both belong to the same club that Bertie Wooster belonged to, the Drones.
Yes, that's right. Do you know what Pifferari were?
Pifferari is a kind of bagpiper.
Yeah, they were the shepherd bagpipers from the Abruzzi Hills, and Handel, as you correctly said, used a bagpipe type of drone for the background to his Pastoral Symphony, a mark. Frank, a painting by Francesco Guardi of the Church of San Giorgio Maggiore is illustrated by this music. Whose music would you say?
Yes. There's a lot of red in the painting, and I think it's by a ginger-haired composer.
Yes, the Red Priest.
Vivaldi.
That's right, yeah, Vivaldi, known as the Red Priest. Yes, good. Ian, a painting by John Singer Sargent shows a society lady reputedly in the act of singing the last word of a favourite Victorian ballad. That's the sort of arrested moment in the picture. And this is how it begins.
A voice from far away. Listen and learn, it seems to say, all that tomorrow's shall be as today.
That's the beginning of the second verse, but what is the last word of that song, Ian?
Well, it
sounds
not,
difficult,
not
but
difficult,
it's...
No, it's not difficult at all. I think we're all right there.
Yes.
Amen.
you're not far wrong. Cheerio.
Or?
Goodbye.
Goodbye, yeah. Bye.
Tosti.
Tosti's goodbye.
Yes, Tosti's goodbye.
And in the picture, she's supposed to be singing goodbye, and that's her mouth.
Yes. I love the way in Scotland everybody says cheerio.
Oh, yes.
Instead of goodbye.
It's usually cheerio.
Not everybody.
Or practically everybody.
And I once had somebody use a charming expression for if you had... this was actually in a place that Frank knows, in part of the halls of residence of St. Andrews University. And if you had a sort of bed sit, but there was a little room attached which you could use for entertaining friends, a friend of mine described that as a situtery.
Dennis, going back to this Glasgow Art Gallery thing, a picture called A Young Man Singing to a Violin is represented on the record by the voice of a countertenor. While we listen to a few bars, I shall be wondering where that expression countertenor came from.
I would have bored an inning song.
So why counter-tenor, Dennis?
Well, because of the days when people wrote things like that, there wasn't very much literacy around. And one of the essentials of a singer is to be able to count the bars, right?
Yes, yes.
So they were given a simple test of counting from 1 to 10.
Yes.
If they were able to count from 1 to 10, they were known as a counter-tenor.
Very good. You can laugh, it's absolutely right. Also because he sings the counter or opposite part. It's another reason why they called him
the
counter. The
rest of the questions have been so difficult, I didn't know.
The first time I ever encountered a counter tenor, in fact, was in a recording many years ago of a Handel opera for which I was engaged. And I had many, many times heard on record or on radio a famous counter tenor, Alfred Deller, but I'd never come face to face with him. And I arrived to do this recording on the first day, and I wasn't somehow introduced. And it was the most terrible experience for me, because Alfred Deller, had, in those days, and probably still does, had quite a big sort of RAF-type moustache. And he stood up to the microphone on one side and for a recitative in which I was taking part. And I was quite unprepared for the fact that this chap with this big moustache would suddenly sing, Fermo! And I went into a paroxysm of giggles. And I remember the contralto slapped my wrist.
Does he do that, contralto?
Oh, yes.
So do countertenors sometimes.
Control yourself, she said. But he was a marvellous singer, and it was just a little unexpected. Yes.
I have now one question for all four of you. The one question for all of you. I'm going to ask you to write down your answer, and then when you read out what you've written, we'll see who got nearest to the truth. Or perhaps more interesting, who managed to get farthest from the truth. The question is this. What did the Princess of Cyprus do for only two nights in Vienna? I'll repeat the question. What did the Princess of Cyprus do for only two nights in Vienna? And John, because you may conceivably know the answer, I come to you first. What do you think she did for only two nights in Vienna? Any ideas? No.
Cyprus only suggests to me musically something to do with Otello. And it's obviously not the case, otherwise why would Vienna be in it?
You mean Othello, the Moor of Cyprus?
That's right. I think you would have to give me a
Well, we'll just press on. See, Frank, what did the Princess of Cyprus do for only two nights in Vienna?
She ate chocolate cake, danced the waltz, vomited, and was sent home.
There's nothing left that Vienna's famous for, is there? Ian, do you know what she did? What do you think she did?
My version of it, she acted with a certainly rather a greater degree of restraint, because all I've put is she decided not to eat the anchovy on the top of her Wiener Schnitzel.
A much wiser course, yes. Dennis, what did she do for two nights in Vienna?
Maid of the Mountains. And she left because they asked her to play the mountain rather than
the maid. Well, I'll tell you what the Princess Cyprus did for only two nights. She ran. The play was called Rosamunda, Princess of Cyprus, with Schubert's incidental music, and it survived for only two performances in 1823. And if someone hadn't rescued the music, we would never have heard this. Schubert's music from Rosamunda, Princess of Cyprus. It's generally believed that certain well-known tunes can be performed simultaneously, and I had a letter from Wing Commander Peskett of Tenterden in Kent, who mentions three. He mentions Swanee River, Annie Laurie, and Dvořák's Humoresque. Is it true, he asks, that those three tunes can be performed together without actual loss of life?
Yes.
I thought we would find out, and there's one easy way to find out. So, John, would you please sing Swanee River on cue? So it's going to start on that note. That'll be your note. Ian, would you sing Maxwell's Embrace on Bonnet? And I shall play Yum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum. You'll see how we get on. I'll give you a sort of dance band leader's lead-in, which will be 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? So... that's you. That's your note. Right.
Yes.
Here's mine. Right. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Maxwell's Embrace on Bonnie River. at home. And me, the love is
No.
Now Dennis and I will do Schoenberg's as
Pierre Luna. Pierre Luna. You can do it with There's a Long, Long Trail of Winding and Keep the Home Fires Burning as well.
You're on.
Right. And wait on.
We'll take your word for it.
You can do it.
Anyway,
you can definitely do it with Pack Up Your Troubles and Tipperary.
Tipperary, yes, you can. Anyway, Wing Commander Pesket, you now know that it can be done, but it's inadvisable, I think. I'd say.
Oh, it's done for me, that.
And so to the last round. Four named people feature in our final round this week. They are respectively Tom Bowling, Ada, The Joy of Our Home, Charlie, guess who's singing that one?
Guess who's and, Charlie.
And Bonnie Jean. John, tell us what happened to poor Tom Bowling.
Will you? He died.
And where he's gone.
Right.
record.
Here a sheerhawk lies Tom Bowling, the darling of our crew. No more he'll hear the tempest howling, for death has broached him too. His form was of the manliest beauty, his heart was kind and soft. Faithful below, Tom did his duty, and now he's gone aloft, and now he's gone aloft.
Yes. I think there must be two versions of that.
Well, because it's out of copyright, everybody's done a different arrangement.
But it's very difficult to sing any song that ends foot.
Yes, it is.
I just dipped into my arrangement.
Charles.
Don't you love the rhyme, though? Tom Bowling, Tempest Howling.
Howling, yes.
They probably did rhyme in the early 19th century.
A good point. Yeah. Frank, the saga... I suspect this one's later in the 19th century. The saga of Ada, the Joy of Our Home. Almost...
From the opera?
Too poignant for the... Verdi's Ada, right, yeah. Verdi's I haven't been on the show all these years without knowing you mean Verdi's Ada.
How does it go?
Ada, I'll play a little bit of the tune. Like that.
Ada, the joy of our home... Gone from the earth, where does she roam? Fond hearts still sigh o'er her tomb. Ada, our loved one, is gone. Ada, the gentle and fair, happy by day and at night with no care. Ada, with light waving hair. Ada, our loved one, is gone.
Very, very affecting indeed. Very affecting. Dennis, brighten us up, please. Oh, Charlie, take it away.
Oh, yes.
That key, that would suit you.
Yes, I think it would suit me. Stay around there. Right.
Right.
Oh, Charlie, take it away. Oh, Charlie, take it away. It makes me feel so funny each time we kiss goodnight. It makes me quiver, it makes me shiver, it fills me with delight. But, oh, Charlie, take it away. Oh, Charlie, take it away. The little bit of hair you wear upon your upper lip, it tickles me, Charlie. Take it away.
Right.
when
Ian, she comes from Bonnie, Scotland, where the bluebell grows, and it was Sir Harry Lauder who introduced her to us.
Oh.
Now it's your turn. Okay? I'll give you an introduction, shall I?
Yes.
In an ice wee hoosie on the banks o' Loch Lomond lives the bonnie lass that I loo best. There's no mistake about her, I could never live without her, for there's no another like her in the West. She lives wi' her granny, her dear old granny, and very fond of her she seems to be. I ken her granny loves her, 'cause everybody loves her, but there's no one loves her half as much as me. I love my Jean, my bonnie, bonnie Jean. Oh, she's very fascinating, and she's only 17. Her hair is nice and crimpy, and her cheeks are like the rose, and she comes from Bonnie Scotland, where the bluebells grow.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you, everybody. And that's where we end this edition of My Music. A modest victory for Dennis Norden and Ian Wallace. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Tony Schreiber.